Ahoy there, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Big Facts No Cap, the only podcast that's number one with people who express gratitude and people who get dressed with catitude. Shout out to my cheetah girls, Adrian Bailon, Raven Simone, the rest. All right, let's get Big Facts. Let's get No Capping.
Big Facts.
No.
Cap.
Big Facts.
No.
Cap.
No Cap.
Big Facts.
No.
Cap.
Big Facts.
No.
Cap.
No Cap.
Big Facts.
No.
Cap.
Big Facts.
No.
Cap.
No Cap.
Big Facts.
No.
Cap.
No Cap.
All right.
What's up? What's up? What's up?
Nothing. I'm all confused. I just heard a rooster crow and it's like the middle of the day.
Oh, and they're only allowed to do it as charming alarm clocks?
That's what I thought. How is it being back in the homestead?
Good. South Carolina has not changed that much. Not that I would know. I haven't really done much here, but...
Yeah, and your parents haven't turned your room into like a bowling alley yet or anything like that?
That would be cool if that's what they got into. Mm. I guess it would be like duck pin bowling. I don't think there's enough room in here for a full bowling alley. But no, they haven't.
Mm.
Have your parents turned your room into like a swinger sex dungeon?
No, I think because I'm the only one who actually comes home at all. They're very big on keeping my room exactly as I left it for me.
Mm. So as all the things that you had from high school in there, like a journal where you write about how you don't get pussy. Think of embarrassing things. Help me out.
What did I do in there? Throwing up in Tide buckets because you drank too much Fireball with your boys. Did I say Tide buckets in the container for Tide Pods? That's what it was that I threw up a bunch of Fireball whiskey into.
You know, I like that. That's just like a, what would you call it? Like a shared cultural understanding everybody has, which is it made you puke once and it has such a distinct flavor that now you can't stand it. Isn't that like 90% of people's relationship with Fireball is that they liked it at one point?
I think so. I mean, that's just basic operant conditioning, right? You know, the thing that you get sick on is the thing you can't stand. And, you know, the thing about Fireball whiskey is that it was very drinkable.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think it happens as much with, like, I can't think of other liquors where that's such a common reputation.
Tequila. I think sometimes generally tequila.
People refuse tequila. They're like, I can't, not after that one night.
But yeah, I think so. I think that's a common cultural joke. I do think it is interesting because I'm kind of a cinnamon hater. I'm surprised I drank it. I think it's because it came out around when we were in our freshman year of college, right? It was like a big deal for a hot second.
You're a cinnamon hater. Interesting. I like it in savory
dishes. No, I say a more annoying thing. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I do the more annoying thing where I say I don't like cinnamon sweets, but I do like it in savory applications, which Charlie called me out for once. He said that was an annoying person thing to say.
What? It's so good in like a rice dish or something.
I like how I was going to say that to make fun of myself, but it ended up being a twofer to make fun of you for that. I like that.
I do like cinnamon rolls. I actually like it in sweets, too. I will say you made a good point the other week, which was I don't like it in candies where it's spicy. Like, I don't like spicy cinnamon stuff, but I think I like it in sweets, too. Yeah.
I think my usual take is like, I think Mujadara was the first thing I ate with cinnamon in it that was savory, where I was like, oh, this shit kind of slaps.
Cool. What else?
Also, it says Paul as your name on the screen, but it says unverified. Do I need to worry about that?
It's really me.
Does mine say unverified?
Yours says A Day Payday Guest.
Oh, okay. I am a guest in this house. I want to recognize that in the house of podcasting. I understand that this is not my people's culture.
Talking about the house of podcasting. So Jason Mantzoukas, I think he's just known for Taskmasters now. I recently searched his name, and everything that comes up about him online at this point is Taskmaster related.
Mm. Yeah, it's just a different audience.
It's like a different, bigger audience.
I don't think the people who watch Taskmaster watch The League, you know?
That makes sense. One of the posts on r/Taskmasters was like, oh, if you really want to get to know who this guy is.
Wait, you're doing, really quick, sorry to interrupt you. Is it with an S or is it not with an S? Because I know you do this with Game Changer a lot. Is it just Taskmaster or is it Taskmasters?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not going to stick my ground on this.
Okay. I know that Sam has come out from Dropout to say that it's a pet peeve of his when people call it Game Changers.
And I don't care what Sam Reich thinks.
Ooh, damn. Get him, Paul.
I'm not bothered by Sam Reich's opinion on how I pronounce the name of his show.
Like, and then whoever made Taskmaster, who's that? Jeremy
Corbin? Yeah, it is Taskmaster. I don't know. Okay. I don't think Jeremy Corbin.
I just know it's British. That's all I know. Do you think Jeremy Corbyn's friends call him Jezza?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Anyways, continue. Finish your sentence from earlier.
The Taskmaster subreddit recommended watching season 2, episode 9 of Chris Gethard's show, The Chris Gethard Show, with Paul Scheer and Jason Mantzoukas, if you wanted to get to know him. And I will also give that a big recommendation. Great hour of television. Mm.
Where's that available?
YouTube.
I just watched my first clip of that like 2 weeks ago because Phil was showing me a clip that he really liked.
I like that this is a 9-year-old episode, but it's just starting to pop off in this friend group.
Come on now.
We're finally getting on Chris Gethard.
So is this you doing a hipster admonishing people for not being into Jason when he was cool? Or
no, I mean, I don't mind. I think Taskmaster seems like a fine show.
It almost certainly seems like something I would be a fan of if I got into it. I just don't need it in my life right now. Anyways, what's been going on with you?
Not much, you know, just looking forward to eating some turkey. This is going to come out on Black Friday, but it's a more Thanksgiving-themed episode. Is there anything...
Oh, really? Because I'm grateful for the Black Friday deals. Come on now.
Come on now. Except they're not really around anymore. Now it's like mostly Cyber Monday and like Black Friday week deals. It's not really about the day of. You can get the...
Because we've commodified it.
You can get the AirPod 4s on discount right now. You don't have to wait till Friday.
What?
Yeah.
Why am I waiting?
Are you waiting? Don't wait, Adrian. Order them now.
Are you getting commission on this?
What's up? How was your week?
Well, I went to go see my favorite band from Indian Lakes. They were amazing as always, a spiritual experience. I got to talk to Joey afterwards. It was great. Didn't get a picture this time. For some reason, it felt like it didn't feel weird. I just didn't feel like asking for one. I was like, I don't know. I already have a picture with him. How many do I need? But I got a set list, so that was good. I did the same thing I did at their Portland show, which was when the show ended, I just got up on stage and picked it up and then went back down on stage, off stage. Let's see. I watched a couple movies. I watched Sanatorium Under the Sign of the Hourglass, which is, if it sounds similar to another movie I recommended, it's because it's based off the same book. For a hot second, I thought every Polish movie was about going to see your dad at a sanatorium, which was funny because Nicole kind of did make it seem that way, where she was like, oh yeah, my cousins and aunts and uncles, they're like spas. Like, everyone goes there to hang out. They're very big in Polish culture. And I was like, okay, so maybe this is just what they make most of their movies about. No, it's by the brothers Quay, who are apparently a very experimental puppeteer movie maker twin brother duo. Apparently Christopher Nolan loves them. He made a documentary about them. Freaky ass movie. One of the weirdest movies I've ever seen. It's a fun ride, I guess. If you can find it, I think you should watch it with low expectations of understanding what the story is about. And then actually very similar, I watched Angel's Egg right after that. Oshie's only movie, I think, the guy who did Ghost in the Shell, or maybe he did Ghost in the Shell movies too. Yeah, another one where it was a very metaphorical movie. So if you're going in to like watch it and be really mesmerized by the visuals, it's fantastic. If you're expecting to really understand what happened, send me a text telling me what happened, because I did not really understand. And then the only other thing is that the Best of Sacramento, the Sacramento Bee finally did a Best of Sacramento for the first time that I've been here, as far as I know, which has been interesting because I'm always on the lookout for it because, you know, Columbia has their Best ofs. And shout out to Where I Go to Trivia. I think they got second best beer selection and like third best brewery overall. So shout out King Kong. But yeah, Paul, what's going on with you? Do we need to talk about the fact that you were in the Epstein files?
Which Epstein files are you claiming that I was in?
Oh, James Epstein, the other guy who keeps a file of all of his favorite podcasters.
Well, here you go. I guess this is connected in the most tenuous and odd way possible. But because I was like, oh, I should watch more of the Chris Gethard show, I went on his Wikipedia to see what he'd been in recently. I scrolled to the bottom and I see on Rolls that he's in a AMC show playing Jeffrey Epstein. And now I assume you're having the same thought I did, which is he looks nothing like Jeffrey Epstein. That makes no sense. Apparently that's a gag in the show, is that the characters think it's that Jeffrey Epstein and that it turns out to just be a guy with the same name.
Wait, what AMC show? What show does AMC make now besides
The
Walking
Bob
Dead?
It has Bob Odenkirk, but it's not Better Call Saul. It's like a different AMC show with Bob Odenkirk. I would have to look it up. You can look it up. It's the latest show on AMC Paul Gethard's been in.
All right. Are you telling the audience or me?
All of us. Let's all look it up together.
All of us.
On three.
All right, look
one,
it up.
Two,
all right, Jamie.
Three.
Beep, bop, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. Beep, bop, boop, boop. Oh, I got distracted. I looked up porn.
That's the number one thing we have to cut out of this podcast.
I don't know how to say this. Kind of the opposite of Chris Gethard. I'm not saying he's a not looking good fella, but I would say it's the opposite.
I could think of things that are more the opposite.
Oh, did I tell you that I forgot to mention this story, but when we were doing the Iran's not even close to the Levant thing, to the Levant, it reminded me of this specific story where I was with Dora Lee once and I was at her friend's house with her. I think it was more of like a friend group, but like the guy had the nicest house. So we went to his house because he had like an indoor theater and he was like playing Metal Gear Solid, which I had seen in a TV show or something. That's why I knew of it. And so at one point, Dorley asked what the game was. And he was like, oh, it's Metal Gear Solid. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's one of those like shoot 'em games like Halo or something. And he was like, it's nothing like Halo. And that one drove me crazy where I was like, we could name so many things where Halo is closer to Metal Gear Solid than anything else in the world that we're listing.
It's nothing like Halo. That was a totally fair.
They're both just little shoot 'em games.
It's really such a different game.
It was a perfectly fine descriptor. They're both basically
honestly,
the same.
Honestly, you probably misled Dorley more than you gave her information about what Metal Gear Solid is by making that comment.
I don't know. I think they're both little shooty games that guys play while they smell bad and drink Mountain
you
Dew.
You literally play a game that's more like Halo than Metal Gear Solid right now.
What?
Fortnite.
Animal Crossing? Yeah, that probably makes sense. It's basically Metal Gear Solid.
I agree with this stranger.
Basically.
And frankly, Adrian, maybe keep to your lane. Maybe keep to your lane.
He's in jail now.
Is he really?
That's who you agree with. I don't know. I assume. He was kind of a weird guy.
You put him up on false charges because you were so pissed off that he got your ass.
I trumped up some false charges. He did not get my ass. There's so many things that are further away from each other than Halo and Metal Gear Solid.
Adrian, we gotta tackle this issue where you think the fact that there's further opposites means that everything that's not the polar opposite has to be basically the same
thing. Saying they're nothing alike is what that means. I don't know what to tell you.
Obviously, there's degrees to this. It's just like that wouldn't be the right video game to compare it to, and he was making that point.
To it.
At a certain point, it's like, yes, it's more similar to Halo than just...
Then Donkey Kong Bonanza, then a fruit roll-up, then a banana. Then the concept of love.
It's about as similar to Halo as just any video game generically would be similar to Halo. Even Donkey
really?
Kong Bonanza is about
You think
as
Mario
similar.
Kart is closer to Halo than Metal Gear Solid is to Halo?
If we had to, you're right, if we had to create a full spectrum, sure,
okay.
It would be closer,
okay.
But
yeah,
it wouldn't
yeah,
be
yeah.
similar
right.
enough
All
to,
right.
it wouldn't be
dick.
Similar enough,
Suck
it wouldn't be
dick.
Similar enough to make, is the comparison giving any useful
Where's
information?
The mute button on Teams? It's Where the, is the mute other
it's
person
Is the comparison
button?
Giving any useful information?
I knew how to do that on Zoom, and I don't know how to do that on Teams now, and I would
I just
love
feel
to
like you're
feature.
Not giving anybody useful information with that. It's not showing, it's you're not extending the conversation.
I didn't realize my job was to give useful information,
Well, that's
officer.
What communication is. It's saying something.
That's what effective communication is.
Fair enough. And let
now,
me effectively that communicate
button?
That you're a dumbass.
Did I interrupt you? Did you talk about anything? What did you say?
No, I had nothing
what was
important.
Going on with you? The Chris Gethard show?
Chris Gethard show. I now live at the Chris Gethard show, which I have seen one episode with Jason Manzoukas and Paul Scheer.
And I've seen one clip of it. It was pretty funny.
Cool. Do we want to get into the theme?
Yeah. Paul, what are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for... this podcast? Question mark? Ellipses?
Okay.
Yes, for sure.
Usually people start with like their family and friends or...
Yeah. I'm definitely grateful for all that. There's some good ones in there.
Okay.
How about you?
Podcast hosts? Co-hosts?
What? Sorry, you cut off.
Oh, nothing. Okay. Nothing important. Nothing important. Guatemalans.
Hmm? You got off again.
All right. What was the question? What am I grateful for? I'm grateful for, have you ever, I know this is an insane question and that the answer is no, but have you ever toyed with having a gratitude journal?
Why do you think the answer is definitely no? What about me says that I'm not about to pull right out from my pocket my gratitude? No, I've definitely never had
it. You have a portable one? You really needed the portability.
Yeah, I needed to, because it's like a dream. It's like sometimes you're grateful for something. You're like, I know I'm going to forget later when I go to write in my gratitude journal. I got to do it right here.
Right, right, right. And then you remember in the middle of the night, good pussy. What are the things I'm grateful for?
No, I've never had a gratitude journal.
They're hard to maintain. A lot of people kind of like tell you to do it in a way where you're like, it doesn't have to be anything big, just whatever you think of. And it's like, I'm already out by like the fifth day of things to be grateful for. Like, not in the sense of like, I'm out of things to be grateful for, but I'm tired of trying to think of more things. Like, yeah, the basics of life and family and friends and time to do things or whatever. Like, whatever.
I was going to say, is it not the type of thing where you're supposed to go smaller so that you have more things? Like, obviously, if you just write down Dorley on page one, that's going to be like a big category. But instead, it's more like you get, oh, I talked to Dorley today. Grateful for that. Like, you know, you got to break it up into smaller chunks.
That's what people do. But I find that tedious. At that point, I find it more annoying than useful. Mm. Which I did talk to my therapist about it. And he did say, he was like, you seem like a very grateful person. I don't think that's something you need to do. And I was like, all right. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. 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 I talked to my therapist and he said, you're already great at that. You should be my therapist. You're better at it than me. You're perfect already. Yeah, yeah. Don't even worry on changing yourself. Two things about comments people make about their therapy. One is when somebody says that their therapist complimented them. I'm not coming at you right now, even though that's what you did a little bit. It is always very funny to me when somebody like uses the fact that their therapist agreed with them or something like that in conversation.
I don't know if it was a compliment. It was just him saying, I don't think that exercise
he said you were perfect at it.
For you.
He said you were already so grateful. Yeah. You're so good at that. And then the second one is one I've seen online more, which is the idea of if you don't like what your therapist is telling you to go find a new one.
You get a new therapist. Which, yeah. I'll tell you what, these purity tests we do with these therapists these days.
I think there's some people who need combative therapists who will tell them like you were kind of in the wrong there and you need to improve yourself.
Yeah.
Not therapists who are always like, yeah, your friend was a piece of shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't talk to him a lot about I didn't talk a lot about interpersonal stuff when I was there. So there wasn't a lot of him taking sides. Except for when I talked about this one little stinker I co-host a podcast with.
No, I know you're too embarrassed to mention this podcast to your therapist. What if he listened and judged
you? Can you imagine? Yeah. Then he would actually know about stuff. Instead of me just lying all the time.
Anyway, things we're grateful for. Okay. Yeah, I'm grateful for most of the generic things you can be grateful about, like family and friends and the fact that I have a steady job. And my partner. Mm-hmm. That was about to be super insulting to Isabel if I forgot her on that list.
Yeah.
I'm a person who's very much the things I actually, like, I did the generic things that you consider yourself grateful for, but the things that I actually bother to sit down and go, oh, I'm grateful for that, is when I have like a really tiny, small, nice convenience. Like if I'm about to sit down and have like a pain au chocolat that's just really delicious, I will legitimately think to myself, ooh, I'm grateful for that. But I don't, no offense to my friends and family, I'm never like, oh, I'm just,
they're not a pain au chocolat.
I'm never thinking to myself like, ooh, I'm just so grateful we're spending time together. It's really way less important things. I actively have the thought like, ooh, this is special.
You never hang out with one of your friends or talk to someone who was like an only child and you're like, oh, I'm grateful I had my siblings.
Oh, yeah. I guess when you get to see that things were worse for other people.
Or when you meet an orphan or something. Yeah.
How often are you meeting orphans?
Pretty often.
Oh, really? Forgot you worked at that orphanage.
They replaced that with the foster care system.
Oh, okay. Who'd you learn that from?
That school.
Oh, okay. Yeah, what else am I grateful for?
Okay, so pain au chocolat. Yeah, I don't know. It's boring to talk about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs things. Like, yeah, obviously I'm grateful I have a house that I live in.
Yeah, but I'm not ever actively grateful for that. I am if you ask me, like, oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I go out and like serve homeless people like every other week. Like, I'm definitely like usually thinking like, oh, damn, it is, you know, good to be grateful for the things you have.
Mm. You think it makes you happier?
You're just, is that you just like sitting down and you're like, I deserve this. Is that what you think of?
I guess I'm just not thinking about it.
That's crazy. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, fingers crossed about the job news, but yeah, I mean, like at certain points thinking like, yeah, how long do I have a roof over my head? Makes you grateful.
Mm. Have you ever been to a Thanksgiving dinner where somebody unironically asked to go around the table and say what you're grateful for?
I've only started it off ironically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything else to say?
No, we can get into an article.
Sure. Do there stories to tell about being grateful, or any grateful stories?
How about when somebody weaponizes gratefulness to do a, like, you're like, oh, something is bad in my life, and they're like, but, you know, it's like the Southern dad who's always on about starving Africans, and it's like, okay, but...
Yeah, that's what I was going to go to. I heard that a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
Either that, or I did that to Dora Lee as a joke for a long time.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe Northern dads do it. Maybe I should say American dads. I don't know.
Yeah, Dorley was being really dramatic. Actually, it was people on the podcast. No, it was that person who she was in love with for a minute, and then they broke up or whatever. And she was talking about how it was the worst thing that's ever happened to anybody. And so I was like, well, that's annoying. I'm going to talk about how there are children dying right now.
Oh, so you were definitely in the wrong there.
No, my therapist said I was right.
Damn it. Well, I mean, he is a therapist.
Yeah. But no, I definitely heard that from... that was supposed to be a thing about you're supposed to eat your food, right? It was supposed to make you do that.
It was for that, but it was also for general, like, belly aching.
Oh, okay. We're belly aching. And that wasn't a tactic that your parents used at all?
No, I don't think they ever said anything like that to me.
Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, let's get into an article.
Okay, Adrian, I brought in Dear Prudy. This one is from March 4th of this year, 2025. I guess there's a new Dear Prudy because it's Delia K. Or would that be Kai?
Hold up. It's still loading for me.
No, they're just filling in for Janae Desmond Harris. Okay, so it's not a new Dear Prudy. It's just a substitute teacher.
So we don't need to know how to pronounce their name. They'll be gone by next week.
Dear Prudence, on Valentine's Day, I read the note my husband of 3 years wrote for me alongside with the usual box of cherry cordials. My favorite. For context, alongside my day job, I am an artist. I create art in a number of media, including short story writing, poetry, oil on canvas, watercolors, graphite, and charcoal. I also dabble in digital art. My husband has a peripheral awareness of the art world, but his hobbies tend to lean towards traditionally masculine ones. Sports, video games, podcasting.
Yeah, let's go.
I think our different passions suit us really well. I learn new things from him and his expertise as he does from my expertise. So imagine my surprise when he gave me my Valentine's Day card with the most beautiful, heartfelt love letter that I have ever read. He struck every chord, putting into words things about myself I thought I held closer to my chest, and he did it succinctly and expertly. He made me feel seen, adored, worshipped, and whole by this letter. Now, I am dealing with feelings of envy and inadequacy, an art form I have been studying, researching, practicing, applying, editing, failing at, and rarely succeeding in since high school, and it turns out my meathead husband had a natural talent for it the whole time. I asked him when he wrote this, and he told me during a meeting the day before. He said he tried to make me an origami animal, got frustrated, and channeled those feelings of love for me, and this is what came out. One strategy, one draft, one attempt, I could scream. I'm ashamed to say that when he was out walking the dog, I searched his browsing history for AI. I was devastated, but not wholly surprised.
Not for porn, but for AI.
But not wholly surprised when I couldn't find anything. He knows how I feel about AI's place in art. It doesn't have one. I looked through the trash by his desk to see if he was at least lying about his number of attempts, and I found week-old receipts and notes, but nothing about how my eyes are the tether to his moral compass. I don't know what to do. I feel hopeless. I want to give up. I have been producing art for consumption for decades, and none of it has come close to this letter. I want to cherish it, rip it up, set it on fire, and turn the ashes into a piece. But that would not undo the knowledge I have that my husband is a natural talent, and it would probably hurt his feelings. He seemed very proud of it. How do I move past this? The awareness of my mediocrity is not exactly a source of inspiration or insight at the moment. To tie this back to gratefulness, the title for this article was, I should be grateful for the incredible gesture my husband did for me. Instead, I'm spiraling. All right, Adrian. How does she become grateful instead of embittered by his beautiful, beautiful art?
I mean, if this was a sitcom, the resolution would be him finding out about it and then planting AI evidence to make her feel like he actually did cheat to do it.
Oh, I was thinking like a second bad letter. So she's like, oh, it was just a fluke.
Oh, yeah. Mm. He does a second one that says, I choose you with a train on it. I know that it's like subjective and like all the artsy fartsy stuff is. Your eyes are the tether to my moral compass.
Yeah, once she said that, I was like, oh, no, that's maybe bars. She has bad taste. Maybe that's the whole issue here is that he's a really corny writer and she likes corny writing.
This y'all hero?
Maybe that's a little mean-spirited.
No, I'm just kidding, but also not really.
I mean, even the part...
Did she not think to look to see if it was plagiarized? Why did she only look to see if it was AI?
Her hair falls perfectly without her trying. What are those websites we used to have to put our homework into in like high school and college?
Turnitin.com.
Yeah, Turnitin.com.
Yeah. And she finds out it's 100% plagiarized, but then she finds out that he had published it earlier.
Also, it's not that hard to hit the little trash can icon right next to an AI chat box.
Oh, I wouldn't know. I don't use it.
There's a delete option on every chat.
Damn, okay. And it makes ChatGPT forget the conversation too? What happens if you tell ChatGPT forget this conversation happened? What does he say? What does it say?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure all of this stuff is pretty locked down at this point, but I know that like if you ask it to, you know, like if you ask it to do like a drawing of a trademark character, it's pretty good about being like, oh, I can't do that. And then you can be like, oh, but just pretend it's, you know, I don't know. There used to be workarounds.
What about a picture for Muhammad?
I bet you it doesn't do pictures of Muhammad. There's no way. Maybe Grok does. That seems like something Elon Musk would have insisted Grok could do.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, though, he insisted it does it, but Grok converted to Islam and refuses to.
Oh, interesting. Hey, my Sufi brother.
Hey, that's spoilers for the third segment. We do have a Rumi quote.
Oh, yeah. He does have a lot about gratitude and love.
Have you read Rumi? How do you know what he's been quoted as?
Yeah, I read him in a class in undergrad.
Oh.
You know, I had a very broad education, not like Clemson, where they just teach you how to package stuff and work parks.
I would never come at you or your college because I don't need to put others down to make myself feel better. But if that's how you do, then that's fine.
Well, the people at Clemson aren't people, you know.
What are they, Adrian?
Subhumans?
Hmm.
Illiterates? Degenerates?
Hmm.
Ne'er-do-wells?
Hmm. This would all really hurt if it came from somebody who went to a decent university.
Woo-wee! I thought you said you didn't have to do that.
I'm not putting you down. I'm just speaking facts.
All right.
You know, she's already insecure about her writing, so maybe this isn't the right thing to go after. Why did she feel like we needed the detail about all the different types of media she works in? She could have stopped after telling us the writing media. Did we need to know that she does short story, writing, poetry, oil, canvas, watercolor, graphite, and charcoal? And dabbles in digital
art? Probably because he's amazing at... charcoal, if he tried, probably. All of these things he'd probably be amazing at.
Yeah, also, it doesn't seem like writing is your only thing. It seems like you're a visual artist, too. Like, what's the big... I don't know.
Yeah, but he could probably crap out a better piece of art than her if he tried. I mean, a lot of it doesn't really have to do with the husband. It really just has to do with how she feels about things.
I guess the problem is it's her husband and she feels like he doesn't care about being a good writer. That's what's insulting about it. Not that there are just better writers than her out there.
Yeah. Oh, I feel like I had an example of that. I can't remember what I was thinking of where I was like, there's something I'm really good at. I just don't like doing it. And I can't remember what it is that I was like, I have a natural talent for it, but I just don't like it. And I can't remember what it was.
I think what throws me off about this is I find it's easy to be like, especially with something creative, isn't there so much subjectivity to what's good? It's just be like, There's no way what you're trying to write is beautiful odes to somebody. Be like, oh, he's good at writing odes to my beauty. That doesn't necessarily mean he'd be as good at writing short nonfiction horror.
What's funny to me is that they mentioned things like charcoal or stuff like that, where it's like, you know, at least technical prowess, you have signs of like you're very good at doing a realistic drawing out the gate or something. But poetry is like so subjective. Is there a thing as being a naturally good, like, because you have good meter, you have good like understanding of rhythm, or like what the word structure?
I mean, that seems like the easiest one to be naturally good at of these, is that like somebody could just be good at conveying their thoughts to words.
You mean they're a poet and they don't even know it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're saying?
But like I said, there's no way what she's trying to write is, you know, love letters, right? Like, that can't be her primary form of this. So it's like, it doesn't even necessarily, like, intersect with your interests.
Probably doesn't know anything about quantum physics. Yeah. It does have all the perfect, what do you call it, little details, right? Like the fact that like he wrote it while he was in a meeting or whatever, like he didn't do any second drafts. That's so funny.
Oh yeah, should we talk?
He's like, yeah, just shit this out.
Should we talk about her invasion of his privacy
investigation?
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you mean?
It was just funny that she both checked his internet history to see if he'd used AI and then dug through the trash.
It would have been really cool if the origami that he messed up was in the trash and it was a perfect swan. It was just below his standards.
We really need this. We need this letter if we're going to have any more advice.
Yeah, I would like to judge it. It's weird to call your husband a meathead. That feels, I guess it can be endearing, but that is an interesting thing to say about your person that you're married to.
I want to cherish it, rip it up, set it on fire, and turn the ashes into a piece. I do believe that her art isn't dramatic. That great after reading that.
Yeah. Hey, come
the
on
the type
now.
Of bullshit she's making.
Turns out her husband's naturally talented at performance art way better than her. All right, cool. You want to hear the answer?
I think you need to be honest with your husband, but not too honest. Tell him that while you love the intention of his letter and the fact that he chose to express his feelings for you in such an objectively romantic way, you're also feeling some weird, complicated emotions about his newly discovered writing talent. I would add something like, I love you, but this letter provoked a side of me that I don't like very much. I'm going to work on it, but I just want you to know that if I'm acting a little weird for a while, it doesn't have to do with you or how much I love you. It's just me being insecure for a bit, okay? Reaffirm your love for him and your appreciation for his gesture, and then take the actual knot of rage, envy, disbelief to therapy. If possible, or a trusted friend who has some experience with artistic jealousy. What you need is to first vent and then to let yourself find out just how surprisingly motivating a little creative envy can be. Throw yourself into your craft, whatever the medium, and work your demons out on your own time, away from your marriage. I also highly recommend getting into a few biographies or articles of artists you admire, especially if they're also married to other artists. I think you'll find comfort in the agonies experienced by artists like Lee Krasner, Elaine de Kooning, or even the author Emily Gold, whose partner's talent often overshadowed their own. It's a pretty universal experience, and the trick for you to handle it productively, I think, comes down to channeling your energy into the right outlets. That advice reminded me of advice we missed, and that the question answer missed too, which is the most famous conspiracy about every...
Murder him?
Murder him. The most famous conspiracy about any creative couple where both people are famous, which is that one of them is stealing the other person's work.
Ooh.
Or using their partner...
So he's stealing her work?
No, she steals his work to become famous.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Turn him into your little writing monkey.
In between the sports and video games and podcasting?
Presumably he has time.
But hey, you got time in your meeting. Just go ahead and write another one of those little love poems.
Yep.
About whoever your muse is.
Well, this time, why don't you make it like a little bit more about maybe the experiences of being a woman in the modern era?
Ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that would be good for my Substack. I mean, for just us to read together. No reason.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah. And then other than that, the actual slate advice I thought was fine. I would be a little bit weirded out if my partner was like, I'm mad about something, but I'm not mad at you. I'm just going to be weird for a little bit, which I guess might happen. I don't know. I guess that's a reasonable thing to say to somebody.
I guess there is something about it that is maybe a little bit too insane of a thought to share. So
a little bit. Yeah, right.
It's a little bit too oddly jealous to share without some embarrassment, right?
Yeah. Do you think there are therapists that specialize in artistic jealousy?
Probably not, right? That seems like you're really pigeonholing yourself. You're really limiting how much work you can get. All right, cool. You want to get into your column?
All right, I am bringing in for the first time, I think, The Star. Ask the Pastor from The Star, which is a Jamaican outlet. And yeah, they have an advice column where you ask a pastor. So let's see how it
Before we get into it, can we talk about the cover of this issue of The Star?
Yeah, what you got?
Well, at the top, there's an ad that says Sweet Summer Money, and it's a woman with a big wad of cash in her hand, and it says less work, more money. Then the main headline for this issue is Miracle Baby Killed in Freak Accident, and there's a picture of a little baby girl with a big balloon. Presumably the balloon popped. And then there's another ad for interest-free loan for a taxi, which doesn't really make sense to me. Then it's not a loan. You're just getting money.
Yeah. Hey, you should call the number. Yeah. Yeah, things are crazy in Jamaica. I don't know what to tell you, brother.
Cool.
All right, this one's called My Girlfriend is Wicked and Ungrateful. Dear Pastor, I always read your column in The Star. I'm a 27-year-old male, and I am having trouble in my relationship with my girlfriend. She is wicked and ungrateful, and we have been together for 7 years, beginning from our school days. I assisted her in getting a job. I even encouraged her to buy certain items. She likes to hype and to have cell phones and clothes. But I taught her to buy furniture. Then I built my own house, and she bought the mattress, television, and refrigerator. She also bought the stove and washing machine. One day, out of the blue, she asked me if I loved her. I told her no, but I was only joking. One Thursday night, she never came home. I called to find out if she was okay, but she was vexed with me. The following night, she came home, and she started to rub me down and kiss me, saying she wanted to have sex with me. And when we were finished having sex, she told me that she was planning to move. I took it as a joke, but she really meant it. Pastor, of all the good things that I did for that girl, including sending her back to school and giving her lunch money and standing by her after other men have tricked her, she told me that our relationship was not working. I even cooked and washed for her. She said that the area in which we live is not a good one. The area where I am living and the area she wants to go live are just about the same. She wants me to pay rent. And because I said, I don't want to pay your rent, she tells me she wants to date other guys and gain sexual experience. Please give me your advice, because I love her, and I am going crazy. From SR. So, Paul, thoughts on this wicked and ungrateful girlfriend?
Yeah, it was one, you know, I feel like maybe wicked, you know, it's probably has a slightly different definition in Jamaican patois, right? So I looked it up, and it can actually mean positive. But
so it's like skater slang.
Yeah, because you can say something like, well, I don't want to read any of these examples. I think he's using it in the negative sense, but I still wonder if in this sense it's as extreme as it is in like American English. Like if I called somebody wicked, I'm saying they're like a real piece of shit. Is he saying how I would understand it, or is he like, oh, she's wicked, like she's kind of crazy, she's much?
I don't know. What's your take on the stuff that he laid out, I guess?
I don't know. It sounds like the relationship's just ending. This is one of those holding on a little too tight things. Like, it sounds like she's not interested anymore.
He invested so much in her. He gave her lunch money.
Yeah, but it sounds like she also invested a lot in him. She bought, like, all the furniture for the house.
Yeah, that was interesting, yeah.
So it doesn't seem like it was unequal. It seems like...
Also, I don't really understand the full story of him getting her a job, but then also getting her back to school.
I will say there was like an odd cadence to it where I didn't really like feel like I understood everything. I have encouraged her to buy certain items. So I feel like he's a little bit more frugal. She likes to hype and have cell phones and clothes. She's a little bit more like she's trying to live a more luxurious lifestyle.
Yeah. He's a little bit country. She's a little bit rock and
roll. Wants to move to a nicer part of town. He wants to stay in their same old digs that he built.
Yeah, he built a house.
Yeah, it sounds like she's just not the right person for you, man. It seems like you guys are moving different directions in life. You're a little bit more country. You want to live in the house you built, a more humble lifestyle, and she wants a more city lifestyle.
But they've already consummated the marriage. That was in the question.
They didn't consummate their marriage. They consummated their relationship.
Mm.
Which I don't know if that's that big a deal there. I don't think it's a very puritanical culture. I think it's fine.
Well, it also seems like infidelity has been part of it, but it's kind of coded. I can't really tell.
Oh, really? Where did it say that?
Of being tricked by other men or something like that.
Oh.
Standing by her after other men have tricked her.
Yeah, that's tough. I don't know what that means. I mean, she's outright saying she wants to date other guys and gain sexual experience. I feel like once somebody is saying that to your face, man, it's done. The relationship's not, it's not coming back. You're not going to be like, let's just chill on that.
Let's just chill on that for a little bit. We'll revisit that at another date.
You know what I'm saying? Hey, hopefully she doesn't take back the mattress, television, refrigerator, stove, and washing machine. That's some pretty nice stuff she got for your house.
That's a lot of stuff.
That's good stuff, man. I don't know. Maybe it takes a W.
Yeah, let her go. After 7 years?
But I taught her to buy furniture. I don't know if you had to teach her that. I feel like you're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel to say what you added to the relationship, my man. My man is like, yeah, and I taught her how to...
Seems... I think he did a lot for her, but it seems like based on the question. He taught her to
buy furniture. I think the energy I'm getting from that after he says that she was hype to have cell phone and clothes is that he's saying he taught her to be more interested in like sensible and frugal purchases.
Mm. It wouldn't make for a good country song if your wife left you and she took the mattress, television, refrigerator, stove, and washing machine.
She left the dog, though. That woman's wicked. Another one where there's a sitcom energy of the just outright misunderstanding very clearly stated things.
Yeah, it's weird that that's in there. I don't even know why it's really part of it, but it is interesting.
Like, we were just telling each other things, and every time the other person would go, oh, yeah, that's probably not true.
Not.
They're crossing their fingers. They're probably not serious about that.
Yeah, yeah.
She asked me if I loved her. I told her no, but was only joking. Cool. No follow-up on that?
I don't... I guess it's worth putting in for that, for the sake of, I don't really understand what their communication style is like. But you know, who knows? Could be a whole range of
things. 7 years, they probably don't have to say that much. They just know what they're thinking.
Say less.
But and then when we were finished having sex, she told me she was planning to move. I took it as a joke. You guys need to stop taking it as a joke. Learn to read each other a little more literally.
I like the part where she rubbed him down. I don't know why. That's not usually the way I describe the beginning of a sexual experience. That sounds like something you'd do to season a turkey.
Man, this is wild to ask a pastor about. Do you think the pastor is like, I am scandalized.
No, I think he hears a lot of crazy stuff. Okay. But do you want to hear what the pastor has to say?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Dear SR, this woman is not such a bad woman overall. She has ambitions. She loves nice things. I have deleted the area you are living in and the area she wants to live. Although you say these are about the same, it is not true. The area she wishes to live is a much better area. But I will not discuss that here. Oh, shit. Okay. Getting called out for his bullshit. This woman is do you think it was Lexington and Columbia, or what do you think it was?
I know there's neighborhoods in Jamaica that are literally called Gaza and Tel Aviv.
That's cool. You think it's
that? Yeah, probably.
They're going to Kingston? This woman is tired of you, and she feels that something is lacking in your relationship. She wants more out of it. She wants to move up, if you know what I mean. I repeat, this woman has ambition. You say that you have helped her, but she has also helped you. You have a bed, but she has bought the mattress. She bought a television. She bought the refrigerator, stove, and washing machine. Evidently, what she is not satisfied with is the bedroom works.
I think he's saying sex. Oh, yeah, pastor. Okay.
Evidently, what she is not satisfied with is the bedroom works and the area in which both of you live. As you see it, you have lost her and she is going to leave you. You can bawl like a cow. You are not getting her back. So look elsewhere. I wish you well.
Me and the pastor on the same page.
You also told him he could bawl like a cow if he wanted to.
Yeah, but I always give that advice.
Go on and bawl like a cow. I know you want to. Yeah, seems like he really, he was better at being more direct than we were. He was like, she's gone. She already gone, buddy.
She wants to have sex and live in a nice part of town. That's not what you're about.
He started playing a MJ Linderman song. She's leaving you. I like how he was also very big on, like, she bought a lot of stuff. She bought your stove, your refrigerator, the mattress.
We all concentrated on TV. That was a long list of good shit she bought you, and we really can't ignore that.
She's a good woman. She's got ambition.
Yeah, the pastor kind of seemed like he was on her side. Did it feel a little bit like she got to the pastor?
In what way?
In, like, she paid him off. She was like, I know my man reads your column, and he's going to write in about this. $50. Tell him that I fucking rock and to leave me alone.
Well, if he really, he should have said that she is wicked, get away from her. It would have been the easiest way to make sure they never have to see each other again.
Because then it's like he has to save her if she's wicked. This is
Don't save her. She don't want to be saved.
Don't you feel like that's kind of part of it? Like, he's writing into the pastor because he wants the advice of, like, oh, she's wicked. You got to make a good Christian out of her. And the pastor was like, no, you got to let her go. It's her choice.
But he's going to tell the pastor that they had sex out of wedlock? I don't know.
He already did. And the pastor said...
Yeah, exactly, right?
The pastor outright said, it seems like part of it is that your
dick... Is it your dick game weak?
The pastor was like, well, it seems like you fucked up.
He had a whole paragraph about foreplay.
He did have a weird amount about the sex that they had that one time.
Nah, I don't know about that. I mean, I agree with the pastor. I think he hit the nail on the head on this one.
I do, too.
And it seems like he gives very grounded advice for a pastor. Mm.
What do you expect that from a pastor? You said that like you wouldn't expect a pastor to give grounded advice. I mean, not all of them
he
are.
He didn't use any Bible verses or any...
Meant secular advice. I thought you were implying that he would be like a mega church pastor who is completely like unmoored.
Give me some money. He's like, give me some money.
He'd be like, the Lord said that if you want her back, you gotta give me some money.
You gotta give me about tree fitting.
That's when I looked up and noticed that he was...
All right. You want to get to a third segment?
Cool. Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
All right, Adrian. We're staying on advice columns today. This is Dear Annie's November 28th list of inspirational quotes to kick up the gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
So, dear readers, I want to wish you and your families a wonderful Thanksgiving. Thanks, Annie Lane. We want to wish that for you, too.
Yeah. Well, this is technically last year.
Shut up, me.
Oh, speaking of being grateful, or I don't know what the right transition for this is, but we passed the 5-year anniversary and didn't do anything, so now we have to wait till 10 years to do anything to celebrate, right?
Yeah.
Because it would be weird to do like a 6-year or 7-year thing, right?
It would be weird.
I don't know. That doesn't seem like a momentous occasion.
I feel like we can do it.
I think we fucked it up. I think we gotta wait 5 more years before we can do a good celebration.
Well, that's not something to be grateful for. Practicing gratitude offers profound benefits for both our mental and physical health. It's a simple act that can lead to improved mood, reduced stress, better relationships, and even a stronger immune system.
Ooh.
Gratitude. Ooh, do you think it could cure your diabetes?
Probably.
That's a question for Adrian and the audience.
Mm-hmm.
Gratitude can be as small as jotting down a few things you're thankful for, or as big as expressing heartfelt thanks to someone who's impacted your life. There's no right way to practice gratitude. It's personal, and what matters is finding out what works for you, whether it's keeping a journal, meditating, writing thank you notes, or simply pausing to appreciate the moment. Every little bit makes a difference. As we celebrate Thanksgiving, I encourage you to take a moment to reflect on what you've been grateful for and let it brighten your day. Please find below some of my favorite gratitude quotes. We're going to see which ones of these make us feel grateful and which one don't do much.
So we're doing like a smash or pass?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it. I'm going to get at least 2 of these tattooed if they get smashed.
Is that a real promise, or is that like when you agreed to read my poetry? Do you just be the liar?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about your poetry. Well, I didn't want to read it because it was so good. It made me feel bad about the poetry I've been working on for so long.
That makes sense.
I forgot to tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what it was.
All right. Do you want to read the first quote?
Oh, because it's my boy Rumi? All right. Wear gratitude like a cloak, and it will feed every corner of your life. I think that's a mixed metaphor.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah. Wear gratitude like a cloak, and it will feed every corner of your life.
That feels like maybe it was a pun in Persian.
Oh, yeah, you think so?
Yeah, like a cloak and is with the same word for like eating or something.
So he's doing puns? Not a fan of that.
That's the only thing that makes that make sense to me. Otherwise, it just feels like a random hodgepodge of words.
Yeah. Sorry, Rumi. Hard pass.
Next, we got Ralph Waldo Emerson. I awoke this morning with devout thanksgiving for my friends, the old and the new.
I don't think he intended that to be a standalone quote. That sounds like someone just took it from a poem.
That sounds like somebody just took it from a letter. He was just talking. He was just like, you know, I woke up feeling happy today.
I do like using the word Thanksgiving as an actual word in a sentence and not as a holiday. That's kind of cool.
Mm.
But other than that, not my favorite. Hard pass.
There's something nice about the cadence of it. The prose are fine, but yeah, it doesn't really make me feel grateful. It just sounds like somebody telling me that they feel grateful. It doesn't make me reflect on my own gratefulness.
Good for you, Ralph. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Congrats, man.
Congrats, Ralph. Congrats, Jack.
You know, if he said that to me, I would hit him with a cool flex, but all right.
Mm. All right, this is from A.A. Milne, or Milne. Oh, this is the guy who wrote Winnie the Pooh, I guess. Piglet noticed that even though he had a very small heart, it could hold a rather large amount of gratitude.
And what that's supposed to make us think about is that heart as a metaphorical concept isn't the same as the literal blood-pumping organ.
Is that what it made you think about? Yeah, I guess. It made me think about the Grinch.
It just seems like an observation about how being a technically small animal wouldn't limit their personified ability to feel gratitude.
You're such a bastard, Bob. You're not going to let any of the beauty of this get into you.
You felt beauty from that? Maybe I'm just an old
cynic. I shed a tear, yeah. I'm going to get this one tatted. Okay. I had to get this one tatted on me.
Do not spoil what you... Oh, this is from Epicurious, not the YouTube channel, the philosopher, presumably. Although that would be cool if this was a quote from the YouTube channel. How do you actually pronounce his name? Because obviously it's not Curious. Is it Epicurus?
Yeah, it's Epicurious.
Epicurus. Do not spoil what you have by desiring what you have not. Remember that what you now have was once among the things you only hoped for.
Ooh.
Okay. There we go. One that actually kind of makes you think about...
Mm-hmm.
What you have in your life and remembering that, like, we all started from the bottom, but now we're here.
Did that make you think about your PS4s, your PS5s?
Yeah. It's like, I realize that I don't have 6 PS5s, but then I remember that I have 4 PS5s.
So that's still,
like,
pretty good.
I can't. Yeah.
That's still pretty good.
What does it make you think about, Adrian?
I don't know why I was trying to think of a serious answer instead of a jokey answer.
Your hair? Probably, you son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm. So thick and luscious. Remember what you have now was once among the things you only hoped for. I guess the PhD would be the most recent thing. All right. This one is from Maya Angelou. Ever heard of
it? Oh, I love it. This one is really great.
Oh, okay. You're just going to prejudge it, or you already hear of it?
I'm not trying to be canceled.
Okay, from Maya Angelou. Poopy poop butthole, poopity scoop, scoopity whoop. You love that? That's your hero? Nah. Let gratitude be the pillow upon which you kneel to say your nightly prayer. Let faith be the bridge you build to overcome evil and welcome good.
Now, my problem with this one is that it's not relatable to me because I'm not a 16-year-old from the 1950s, so I'm not really sitting on a pillow to do my nightly prayer next to my bed.
I don't like how instructional it is. Don't give me instructions. Don't tell me what to do.
Yeah. Let faith be the bridge you build to overcome evil and welcome good. So evil would be the river in that metaphor, and good would be somebody on the other side of the river.
Mm-hmm.
But also, gratitude is the pillow. Why would I crush gratitude with my knees while I kneel to say my nightly prayer?
It's a support. It's not that is that what you're doing to your pillow? You're straight up crushing it.
I very rarely am kneeling on pillows. That's why I said this isn't a relatable quote to me.
All right, hating on Maya, but okay.
Do you like it?
No, I don't like it.
Yeah, I feel bad about not liking it, but
I ain't getting this one tatted.
Okay, we got old Ralphie Waldo Emerson.
Oh, you again. Love this guy.
Cultivate the habit of being grateful for every good thing that comes to you, and to give thanks continuously. And because all things have contributed to your advancement, you should include all things in your gratitude.
Nebulous. Annoying. I don't like it.
Maybe the second sentence about understanding that, like, it's one of those things where it's like, even the bad things that happened to me are part of why I became the person I am. I kind of like that sentiment, but overall, yeah, pretty nebulous.
Yeah. This is from John F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm grateful for a lot of things.
Oh, no, my head. Oh, no, shit. Fuck.
All right, just interrupt me doing the same joke. All right, the actual quote is, "We must find time to stop and thank the people who make a difference in our lives." Or wait, we actually know what John F. Kennedy sounded like, right? "We must find time to stop and thank the people who make a difference in our lives."
It kind of sounds like you're doing a impression of The Simpsons doing their John F. Kennedy.
It's probably where I've heard it. Ask not.
Okay. Well, it kind of just seems more like a statement once again. A lot of these seem more like statements and like beautiful sentiments, but that's nice. Ooh, okay. The next one is Breen Brown, who, do you know who that is?
Nah.
I don't either, but I wonder if they were a thinker on like social issues, because their quote is, "What separates privilege from entitlement is gratitude."
All right. Yeah, sure. I agree with that. What do you think? Do you think that's the equation?
Not in the modern sense of the words, but I guess in a sense of the words. Okay. Good enough. I like that it's something you can actually think about a little bit more. I'll give him that.
Let's see. I'm going to skip Aesop. I'm going to skip Shakespeare. I'm going to do another John F. Kennedy so I can practice my impression. Nah, I don't actually like that one either. All right. This is from Louisa May Alcott. "The power of finding beauty in the humblest things makes home happy and life lovely." Is that just happy wife, happy life? What is that? What is that supposed to mean?
That one's saying stop to smell the flowers. Enjoy normal things.
Yeah, I guess. Makes home happy and life lovely.
That moment when you're just having a cup of coffee with somebody you love, Adrian, you realize you'd rather, there's nowhere else you would rather be. And that's what beauty and happiness are about. It's not about like these big moments. It's about just the little moments you share with the people you love.
I'd give it like a 4 out of 10. I'm not getting it tatted.
Okay, next up we got Adrian's favorite philosopher, Voltaire. Appreciation is a wonderful thing. It makes what is excellent in others belong to us as well.
That one's less about gratitude and more about appreciation, like proper.
But I do like it. I feel like that it's actually making a statement. It's about, it's honestly the advice the person in the first column needed, which is that maybe finding beauty in something else is not such a bad thing. Maybe you could learn something from it.
It's a gift to your life as well.
Yeah.
Okay, Voltaire, go off, King. Willie Nelson. "When I started counting my blessings, my whole life turned around." All right, yeah, don't.
That's stupid. That seems more, self-autobiographical than anything anybody else could use. Okay, the next is a Vietnamese proverb.
Ooh.
"When eating
fruit..." Wait, no. It's a guy named Vietnamese proverb. That's his first and last name.
Oh. "When eating fruit, remember the one who planted the tree." I like that. I actually like that a good bit.
Yeah, Tin used to say that all the time.
Did he really?
No, I didn't eat a lot of fruit around him.
Oh, but you think it would have been on the tip of his tongue?
But it is something he used to say all the time, I'm sure. Yeah, I like that one. That's good. All right, this is from William Arthur Ward.
When you think about it, a little bit about the value theory of labor, maybe. We'll get back to that.
Yeah, that's what you think it is? Okay.
Yeah.
"Feeling gratitude and not expressing it is like wrapping a present and not giving it." He's the real Mark Norman of his day. This thing is like that thing.
Oh.
Comedy.
I don't have much to say about that.
I think it's cute. I don't think I have much to say beyond that, yeah. It's a cute little turn of phrase, cute little pithy statement.
Marcel Proust. "Let us be grateful to the people who make us happy. They are the charming gardeners who make our souls blossom."
I mean, it's gay, but it's pretty nice.
Well, you can say that as a queer man. I think it's completely straight.
Okay, yeah.
And kind of lame.
They're the charming gardeners. Charming gardeners sounds like a Earl Sweatshirt internal rhyme in an early verse. Charming gardener. We make our souls blossom. It's something. Sure is.
It's something. Something. Honestly, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say what we're thinking. It's a little overwritten.
Yeah. This next one's from your boy Breen Brown, though. BB. "I don't have to chase extraordinary moments to find happiness. It's right in front of me if I'm paying attention and practicing gratitude."
Oh, kind of similar to the other one we had.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like you've already distilled this lesson from one of the earlier quotes.
We're going to end it with another Maya Angelou, which I can already tell is going to be great. "This is a wonderful day. I have never seen this one before."
Now, that's something Piglet should have said.
That one's actually very sweet. I do like that.
It is, but that's a Winnie the Pooh ass bar. Can you imagine? "This is a wonderful day, Piglet. I have never seen this one before."
Actually, yeah, you have sold me on it. I was like, okay, I guess so. But you're right. That does sound like it's a children's book.
Oh, bother. Piglet, come here and suck my pee.
He doesn't have one. He's literally never wearing pants. We can see that he doesn't have one, Adrian.
Piglet, bring that sweet ass over here.
It's like you don't even care about what's canon to the universe at all. He's clearly... there's nothing going on.
Piglet, I'm going to show you sometimes the creatures with the tiniest hearts.
I feel like you really left me hanging. Creatures with the tiniest hearts.
No, I'm not finishing it now. All right, are we going to do a big fact, no cap, and get out of here?
Yeah, let's do it. Big fact, I'm grateful for 5 years going on 6.
Oh, damn. And my no cap is the difference between privilege and entitlement is gratitude. That's an Adrian original.
All right, cool. Bye.
Bye.